Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Did you say pies? Did you say pies? Or
no, the toilets.
Oh, the toilets. I was saying pies. Sorry, I must have still dreaming of another
guest. He's got something on his mind.
Oh, I'll just say, would Uber Eats come to Ashton Library or not?
I've been seeing Twitter earlier today and nearly went to Galloway.
Yes, Galloway's was... Wow, that was... good stuff.
I mean, first of all, the great hello internet. The great advantage is being in Wigan as opposed to St Helens last week. Not to start a war between the two libraries is the internet here works. So, you know, well done to Wigan. Always my favourite of the two. There's a picture of me somewhere in a Wigan shirt, but I think that's when I was trying to impress a lady in my younger days.
Wow.
What a panel we have for you today, and it's a packed one. Look at this. You can't see me because I'm never on camera, but I've turned up in a fine jumper. Next to me, TV royalty, most popular Australian in Britain, certainly rugby league circles, Andrew Voss. How are you?
I'm well. The introduction is good. That means I'd better come up with something clever.
Well, that's what you do on the telly. I mean, this is your off time.
It's wonderful to be in Wigan. I must say, I come here now with two of Galloway's bakery's finest in the comic cuts, and I'm feeling good. So I'm fueled by Galloway's. I've had a great lesson with Tony the Cabbie on the way here from Wigan Central. A big Brett Kenny fan, so I'm ready to talk rugby league with the world here. With the world.
There is a world here as well, you just can't see it. Cameron Willesey, author. What else are you? The Guardian's Cameron Willesey.
Now and again, yeah. Guardian, first debut on 4020. It's taken many years. I'm finally here.
Well, it's a panel full of debuts on, apart from me and
very
Phil.
Very exciting.
I think if we're not on it, then... are we like the Ravens of the Tower of London? It falls apart.
Can't get rid of us. Stuff on the bottom of your shoe.
Nada, I'm going to ask you, because this is what I do with all people whose names I can't pronounce. How do you pronounce your name?
Nada. Nada Farhid.
Thank you, and then I'll pronounce it wrong throughout. Welcome. You're our Lebanese representative, because Lebanon are in the World Cup, and the flag's there on the table, and you can see it properly. But doing all right. Looks like Lebanon will be in the quarterfinals.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Big game against Jamaica in Lee on Sunday. I've got the ball chart.
Nice.
Yeah, just so I can know what's going on. Nigel Whisker from the Daily... Is it the Daily Mirror again?
It is the Daily Mirror, yes. It's the Daily Mirror. Yes.
And the rebrand was for about 3 weeks, but everyone, you know...
Yeah, we keep changing things around, but ultimately it's the Daily Mirror, and everybody sort of knows, remembers that.
Changing things around just like politicians.
I should briefly say, Richard, for the purpose of this, if Nadja and I bicker at any point in this, it's because we're married. So, just for...
Should we swap? Well, that's fine. we've got an England shirt on the table, and people, again, you might not be able to see, you might not be, but it's not just any England shirt. It is a World Cup winning England shirt, Phil Roberts. And as people will notice, I mean, you're right down there at the bottom of the screen, but you are there. You're in an Ireland top. You're playing for Ireland in the World Cup.
I
Cammy Deeg, yes. Played for England 2008 to 2014, including, as you say, the first ever World Cup in Sydney, which was absolutely amazing. Thought my international days were long behind me, but we have a very exciting yet inexperienced Ireland team. I qualify for Ireland through my mother's family, so I'm hoping to be able to continue the momentum with Ireland that they've been building all year.
Excellent. Ireland at the Copa, I mean at the Copa, but you're up against Spain.
We are indeed, yes.
What do you know about Spain? Because this is one of these things where I don't know anything about anyone. So
quite a lot about Spain, actually. So most of the Spanish players, if not all of them, play in the French League. So they're actually quite an experienced team. They've got some guys that play in Catalan Dragons' first team, and the other grand finalists in France, Montauban. Mm-hmm. So anybody that underestimates them is going to come unstuck.
Well, that's me unstuck already. And Phil's here, because you have to be.
And we should say, to embellish the story, about inclusive sport, and no doubt we'll talk about Casey Badger and the impact that she made yesterday, but you will be coming up against your son in the group stages. Declan's been picked for England.
Yes, he has.
And you're going to smash him.
That's the plan, if I can catch him. Being nearly 30 years younger than me, he's a little bit quicker than me these days. But yes, my son's one of a number of non-disabled players who play wheelchair rugby league. He started playing because it was a way, a number of years ago, we could play rugby league together, which is what it's all about. And he's progressed and been selected for England, and in the third round of the group games at the Copper Box, we're going to go bumper to bumper.
9th of November, that one. That should be a very interesting match. I'll work my way back down. I mean, we haven't done a show since Thursday, Phil. What have you made of the last weekend of the World Cup?
Again, as I've said before, I'm an apologist for the tournament. I've fallen in love with it, but we knew that was going to happen. I think, you know, Greeks, dramatic last-minute tackles, Jamaica's tries. That's all I want to see. You know, Tongan players, Tongan fans singing Delilah with Welsh players. What more do you need? We can talk about all the action on the field, but it's the peripheral stuff that excites me as a rugby league fan, and we don't get to see it enough. And we're getting a taste again for what international rugby league can do when the women's in the wheelchair kicks in. We'll get a whole new raft of different stories, which I think we all can't wait to tell in our various guises. No, I think it's been sensational. I genuinely would say that if you're looking at this sport from the outside and you don't know a lot about it, everything that's happened over virtually the first two rounds, you would have find something to admire.
There's no point in me saying, have you enjoyed the World Cup so far? Because it's a daft question. We've all enjoyed the World Cup. Phil, what have been your highlights so far?
I think really watching some of the teams who are making their debuts in the World Cup, or a less experienced team, should we say, and just seeing how they've been learning through the first two rounds and how they've progressed. Just the way they're prepared to play off the cuff and play exciting rugby, I think it's been really refreshing.
Nigel, same question.
I mean, the fans at the Lebanon game on Sunday and Tonga last night were extraordinary. The colour, the noise, the singing, the joy, the just a pure joy of being in amongst that was brilliant. But I think for me, it's watching England live on Saturday, stuff that you don't pick up on the TV. So, I mean, Dom Young's been... is becoming this sort of star, but being in a stadium, the first time he touched the ball with a bit of sort of daylight in front of him, there was this palpable surge in the crowd. And it's been a long time since I've been at an England game when there's been that, and seeing this huge dreadlocked figure bearing down the wing is fabulous, and it takes you back to Des Drummond and Henson Gill and Ellery and all these, you know, great British players that get you off your seat, basically. So for me, the Dom Young thing is newspaper. You know, I work for a newspaper, and we can hype a lot of things sometimes, but this feels justified. Being there, this feels like this kid could be the next face of the game in this country. You know, we should do everything to push that right now. You know?
Well, rugby union's got no money these days, so they can't pardon him. That's the good news. At least he's safe in Australia.
Yeah.
Good news.
The most exciting thing coming out of Wakefield since Jay McDonald. We're very proud. Very proud. Another Lebanon against Ireland. That must have been quite fun.
It was awesome. I mean, it was so good for me to see Lebanon in flesh. I mean, I have seen them once before in the 2000 World Cup, but it's a completely different side now, something to be super proud of. And I think, personally, growing up, so I lived in Beirut until I was five. everyone always used to say, oh, you know, bombed out Lake Beirut, or it's about the Civil War, and that's all people ever used to talk about. Now we've got role models like Mitchell Moses and Josh Mansour, you know, people with similar names to me that are on a world stage representing the country, which again is in, you know, ruins again, you know, this time because of the blast in 2019 and the economic collapse. So it's something super, super proud to me. And then the amount of support that was there, I was blown away by how many people sort of turned up, you know, and there's only a small Lebanese community in the UK in comparison to Australia and Brazil, which is the biggest one, but to get people out there and, you know, getting behind them, it was awesome.
I'm now thinking of a combined Brazil-Lebanese women's team for the next World Cup. But Brazil coming. Brazil are here. Well, they're here. They're not coming to here. They play France on Thursday night in Featherstone. That'll be a culture shock for them. Gavin, how much have you enjoyed 2021? What year were we in?
2021 World Cup in 2022. I've enjoyed it very much, as you'd expect. Just listening to those stories, really, I think there's very different experiences whether you're watching on TV or whether you're in the ground. And that can be better or worse, depending on the game and the event and the crowd. Last night I was at Wales Tonga, and I don't know how it came across on TV, but there, I loved it. There was, as you said, there was great noise from the Tongans. Mm. We heard the chant of Wales, Wales, echoing round, I say echoing, it was half full, but I mean, going round the ground. And I thought, is that the first time we've heard that at a rugby league ground since 2000? And Tonga fans were brilliant. I'd not seen the fans in the flesh before, not seen the team play before. And when you're watching on TV, you get something different from it, and you get to see what was really happening out there. You know, I think a mixture of the two experiences is great. So basically, being in the ground, you can get something from the occasion, which if it's a one-sided game, you might not. I was at Australia-Scotland on Friday night, and what we got was wet.
So we're blaming Coventry for that, because obviously if you've played the game in, you know...
But, I'm thoroughly enjoying it, learning about some new players, seeing what it's doing for different countries, and I think we can very easily pretend it's doing a lot for countries that it might not be doing anything for. It might be just be doing something for those people involved. But seeing whether it's the fans, the players, the coaches, or the administrators, or the people back home of Lebanon, especially that finally they're on a world stage. As to Michael Checker, this is really the only time that I can think of where you see Lebanon competing on a world stage, and how important that is. I'm enjoying that whole mix of experiences.
Well, you've all had your 5 minutes now because Andrew Ross is here. So. this is very intimidating. It's a very minor cog in the broadcasting wheel in this country, the smallest of cogs. Everyone loves you. This is the concern. People have a go at me all the time, you know, about my hair mainly, and it was worse in lockdown. Sure. But everyone in this country loves you.
Oh, I'm very humbled by the support. Very hard act to follow all the answers there. My answer is probably the sum of all that's just been said. The Rugby League Cup, first word that comes to mind, and this is my third time here, adventure. It's a rugby league adventure. I, from my very first trip in 2000, where it rained from the first day I landed and the sun came out at halftime in the final in 2000, rained every day in between, it's been an adventure. And the more you embrace it, the more you get out of it. It is far more than the games, than the 80 minutes that are played. It is the experience of the ground, of the fans, of fans in little towns, getting up close and personal with the stars of the rugby league world. Now, I know the world's small, but this World Cup has the greatest depth of talent we have ever had. So if you are prepared to put aside big scorelines, you know that you are seeing the best of the best at this World Cup. It is an exceptional lineup of stars, and that's probably why we have more big scorelines, because we now have the strongest, I know Samoa didn't go well in the first game, but it is the strongest Samoan side we've ever had, the strongest Tongan side we've ever had, it's the strongest PNG side we've ever had. You know, you go through the ranks. So I just think that for rugby league fans who just like watching the game, you are seeing the best.
But for those who want to just get a taste of rugby league, and I use the word culture, folks, the Rugby League World Cup is the place to be. And as someone who's covered Rugby League World Cups in other parts, I'm going to say it, there's no better place than the UK to come and experience a World Cup.
Cool. Well, we are part of the Rugby League World Cup Cultural Festival, so I'm glad you said culture.
Did I mention food in that? No, not yet.
I mean,
we'll get to that later.
People would be surprised you haven't. I mean, as someone who, when I was 10 years old, my mum bought me a little mixing desk. It was brilliant. Best thing she ever bought me. And I tried to be a commentator. And as people who will attest have heard me, I did a tape of myself doing a game off the telly, Leeds versus Man United, and I was dreadful. So I gave up on it then, as with many things in life. Do you want to be a journalist? You've got to learn short, and I'll give up on that. Take shortcuts and everything. So if you're broadcasting, you just have to speak. It's all right. You're still filling time between records. How do you come up with these lines? Because people try to copy your style over here, and they don't. It doesn't quite work. How did Andrew Voss become Andrew Voss?
It's confession time, is it? I'm a weirdo. I am a weirdo. Stuff that goes through my head when I'm calling a game, because it's my happy place. It's the only place I ever wanted to be. For whatever reason, from when I was... My dad died when I was 8 years of age. We weren't poor, but we certainly weren't rich. My mum had to work, and I was the youngest of three boys, and I worked as a paper boy from the age of seven. The first thing I bought was my first two 50-cent pieces I got paid in Australia. I bought a Big League magazine with one, kept the other half. And every week I'd buy a Big League magazine, and I became a rugby league fanatic. I just loved the game, and a commentator was all I ever wanted to be. And they say when you have grief early in your life that you can latch onto something else subconsciously, and it was rugby league that I gravitated to, because it was something adults did, it's something that I felt comfortable with. So every weekend I lived for it. And midweek I lived close to Leichhardt Oval, would go to games there. So I feel very fortunate. So my whole life has been watching rugby league. I am a fan, first, second and third. And then on game day, they're stupid enough to put a microphone on me. So anything could come out. Anything could come out. I've got to pull myself back. You know, there's no expletives. But I'm just a fan. I'm just going along for the ride. And call what you see is the commentator's mantra. I call what I see, but that's where the weirdness comes in, because I see things. I'll give you an example. I'll give you a quick example. Daniel Tupou, who you saw last night for Tonga. Hangover 2 came out, which is a really bad sequel. This is a real far-fetched story. Hangover 2 came out, and when in the opening scenes they're going along in the car and they've got the giraffe running along, and they go under the overpass and the giraffe's head gets taken off. I'd seen that movie the week that I went over to Auckland to call a Sydney Roosters game, and Daniel Tupou was playing. Daniel Tupou takes an intercept and is streaking downfield. And as he's streaking downfield, I look at him and I've got a flashback of the Hangover 2, and I call him the giraffe. I call him, he's like a giant giraffe running down the field. The nickname stuck. He's been the giraffe ever since. So that's the sort of weird that goes through my head when I'm calling games. Does that help at all? But it's out of a love for the game. I see the good way before I see the bad. Is there any bad? No. It's a beautiful sport. It's a beautiful game. Football fans, rugby league is the beautiful game. Cop that.
And you got to call Jamaica's first World Cup try.
Well, look, the World Cup has delivered me all sorts of moments, like amazing moments that make my life full as a rugby league fan. I called the first indoor game, if you remember back to the 2000 World Cup. Cook Islands, Lebanon was the first rugby league game indoors at Millennium Stadium in Cardiff. 22-all draw, Hazim El-Masri. Right.
Not the Millennium Stadium in Featherstone, just in...
No, that's it, no. I called the 110-4 scoreline, Australia v Russia at the Boulevard, the old Boulevard.
Must have been exhausting.
I remember the Matt Donovan try like it was 5 minutes ago. Robert Campbell kicks a ball for Matt Donovan, catches Wendell Saylor out to score in the corner. That's like it's 5 minutes ago. Now, to add to that scrapbook of memories, I have the Ben Jones Bishop try now, which I will remember forever. There's only one first. I was there, lucky enough to call it, and it was
It was an incredible moment. It was seriously an incredible moment. And I feel so lucky. You know, suddenly take the headphones off. I'm just a fan. You know, I'm just present for something that people on the other side of the world or the naysayers about the World Cup, they don't get it. They don't get it. They are missing out on something very special.
I have to admit, I was at work, so I was watching on mute, so I didn't hear a word you said. But I did enjoy the pictures.
Yeah,
so
well, good. I do have a brother-in-law in Australia who backed Scotland to nil and took the double into Jamaica to nil. And I think he got $8.50, gamble responsibly, in Australia, $8.50 price. And when I put my phone on at full time, I got one message on my phone. It started with an F. It had two letters in between and finished with a K. That's all I got. Not good call, brother. What a moment. It was just that.
We're in a children's library. Yeah, so the one was Falk.
4 minutes to go. 4 minutes to go. His $50 at $8.50, $425, flew away. Oh, gambling.
I think the other thing that we're talking about here, all of us in our different ways, is passion.
Yeah.
And the one thing that has come across in all the post-match interviews, and we'll have all found it, if you talk to Ben Giles Bishop, you talk to Ashton Golden, you talk to the Greeks, you talk to the Lebanese, how much this means to them. So it's all right us saying what it means to us and how we're enjoying it as correspondents or fans or whatever, but speak to the players. This is why we have to do better with International Rugby League. Because when they're in this environment and this arena and they're crying at their national anthem and they're putting everything into their heritage before they actually play a game, we owe it to them.
I think we owe debt to Tamalolo and Fifita, like those players that defected to Tonga, which really kick-started this whole, you know what, with Samoa now we're seeing, and hopefully down the line it'll happen with the other countries where they turned their backs on Australia and New Zealand, and the next generation will see, you know, what it can bring. And who knows, this might happen in rugby union eventually. You know, I'm doing this on a rugby league podcast, but in rugby union, those nations get thrashed because the, you know, your Australian and the New Zealanders take the better players. And the Fijians, of course, they take those in rugby union. Whereas now we're seeing this tidal turn which levels our game out way more than another code. Yeah. So,
shall we shot tip off your Dominic to play for Jamaica?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
But the other thing is, you'll remember from 2000 that you mentioned that first game, the impassioned speech from Hazem El Masri after the game about what it meant to play for Lebanon. Mm. And we were in the press conference, and there were a few Australian journalists questioning the veracity of the Lebanese team and saying, oh, you're all heritage players, you've all got an Australia. And he said, what did you expect the family to do? Wait around while the war was going on for rugby league?
That's a great point. When you call the Greek side, the Greek rugby league is started in Australia, but it had to start somewhere. And through the hard efforts of those people, that was 2003, and Steve Georgalis was on deck way back then. What, 5-6 years later, that suddenly there is a domestic comp. There is the seeds. Now, in the case of Jamaica, I made the point, and I'm doing a breakfast radio show to Australia still while I'm over here, 8 till 11 at night on SEN Network. You can probably download the app. I made the point, Jamaica the other night, their domestic competition started in 2008. They're 100 years behind Australia. So give them some time. You know, like that's a lot of ground to catch up. Now, it may still be in 100 years. They're still, I know mathematically this doesn't make sense, they might still be 90 years behind, like in ability, but they had to start somewhere. It didn't exist. It does now. And I can only think the Ben Jones Bishop try sent, you know, positive tremors around kids, people of Jamaican heritage. It's, wow, that's pretty special. I wonder if I could do that. You know, like that, surely.
One of the interviews we've done after the first Jamaica game was with Siobhan Bailey.
Yeah.
Second row, played 80 minutes, come from Dehaney Red Sharp.
Yeah.
He's a teacher, about 30 years old. He is going to go back, not only with the experience and memories of playing and his students all welcoming him into the school and congratulating him, but he's learned things that will benefit Jamaican Rugby League along with his 5 teammates.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter they haven't won a game. Yeah. Doesn't matter they've only scored a run. And the same is going to be true in Lebanon.
The Lebanon contingent, is there any way we can kidnap Michael Checker? Don't let him back to the dark side. The rugby union, kidnap him. Like, I'm seriously saying, Lebanon are going to play the quarterfinals and like Australia. But can we tie him up, gag him, bound him, put him in a room, and just don't let him out? Let's not. He is such
such a brilliant coach. He is so impressive. And I know he loves rugby league, hence he's there in the job. Can you kidnap him?
Because I think I'll try and tie him up at least.
He could be massive for Lebanon and rugby league.
I think it would be great. I mean, I obviously knew about him being involved in the Wallabies, and then I started looking into him before this World Cup and realised how passionate he is about Lebanon. Mm. And I was just sort of going on a point that you made, that I'm not a rugby league nut like my husband, and he probably wanted me to support St Helens many, many years ago. But
Hey, come on, you two, come on.
What I really like about Checker's story and what really resonates with me is that as a second sort of level immigrant, your parents have moved, or even third generation like Mitchell Moses, is that you can still give back to the country. So I think he started something that, maybe could be in other sports. It doesn't even need to be in sport. It could be in other ways that you could give back to your country. And I think Greece has done that too. So I think Checker could be a really good ambassador for all sorts of
100%.
Small countries.
I do.
And sort of this passion about what you can give back to
I'm thinking kidnap him for the betterment of rugby league. But certainly specifically Lebanon. I just think he's absolutely brilliant. And in light of a team that's, fledgling rugby league nation, the way he spoke before the first game, he spoke about our own scoreboard, not the scoreboard, our own scoreboard. These are the targets. These are the scores we are looking to achieve. It's not about 4 points and converting tries. They know their place and they know what they're trying to achieve. And I'm sure the Welsh feel the same after last night. They have hit their own scoreboard.
Yeah.
Their efforts have been so wholehearted.
Absolutely. I think this situation of what you're doing for sport is applies to all the small countries, but it's nuanced. It's different with each one. And like I've spent I spent this morning with the Italy team and a couple of days earlier on with them. And what's probably gone under the radar, because, say, the Italy side are nearly all Australian Italians. First of all, the passion thing. I spent years with Scotland, and most of their players were English or Australian. And I know, do not question the passion of anybody who's turned up to this World Cup. The people who aren't here.
Well, question the films in a minute. Because
the people who aren't here might be the people who haven't got the passion. Everyone who's here wants desperately to play for their country. But putting aside the players, with the main players who've been performing for the Italians, there's a group of young Italian players who are there. They're not. Well, they might play on Saturday against Australia, but they're learning. They've been in the environment. They're alongside Nathan Brown, Jake Campagnolo, guys like that, for 3 weeks of full-time training. And they are going to go home, and this is an exclusive for 4020. On Friday night, domestic rugby league starts again in Italy, next Friday night.
Is that right?
Lignano Sharks are playing. They come back 3 years of no rugby league in Italy.
Sorry, is that this coming Friday?
A week on Friday.
A week after they play Australia.
A week on Friday, and two of the players who are training with Italy will be playing in the first game of the day.
Should have heard of that.
And they've got nine teams who are going to play.
Nine.
And obviously during the union season as well, which is an interesting development. But my point is also with the backroom staff, and I'm sure it's the same with Lebanon and probably with Ireland as well. And the Italians, there are loads of them there, all these different staff there, volunteers. Nearly all of them are, 90% of them are Italian, either first are literally born and bred Italians, speaking Italian the whole time, or they're second generation and they're speaking, they're all bilingual. And so when you go into the Italian camp, you are surrounded by the feeling of Italianness, if you have to use that word. And which led me to think, what is this doing for rugby league in Italy or Lebanon or wherever? And then I thought, if it's nothing, does it matter? Does it matter if, looking at the Lebanese fans on Sunday, when it was at Lee, I thought, those people are probably mainly living in England.
Yeah.
And I would think the majority aren't rugby league fans. So is there, are we tapping into a new group of people like the Jamaicans in England and getting people into the sport, even if it's not back home in their homeland?
Yeah, sure.
If we're getting more people watching rugby league, does it matter where they live? That's
good
what
point.
It boils down to.
So, Phil.
Yes.
England shirt there.
Yes.
Ireland colours on.
Yes.
How does that work? I mean, you're one of these evil people who've chosen to represent heritage rather than the country you're born in. You should be banned from the sport, cast asunder.
If England play Ireland, do you sing both anthems?
Probably not. And I think really that just touches on, I guess, the starting point was what Fossey said earlier about how big the Rugby League World Cup is off the pitch, or in our case, off the court. That's what it's got to be about. And that was a really big draw for me. There's no domestic competition for wheelchair rugby league in Ireland. We've actually got four players in our squad who are Irish players who have got very limited experience. I believe it or not, one of them's never yet to play a game. So his first ever game will be in the World Cup. But these are our skilled wheelchair athletes that we've drawn in from other avenues that are really proud and passionate about representing Ireland in the Rugby League World Cup. You know, we've got our own scoreboard. Again, the final will almost certainly be England versus France. That doesn't mean you're not going to see some incredible skill, speed, collisions along the way, breathtaking stuff, I'm sure. But we have our own scoreboard, things we want to achieve on the court, but ultimately our goal is to leave a legacy that means that we've got a whole squad in the future of Irish players who are based in Ireland playing in a domestic competition. And that really is what a Rugby League World Cup should be all about, spreading the game. Not just beyond the M62 corridor in England, but to parts of the world relatively close at hand where it's not played.
And there's two teams that we're going to see, one in the women's tournament and one in the wheelchair, where that is perfectly embodied. So clearly you've got Brazil, who just landed playing their first friendly. We have no idea how they're going to play. We know the philosophy of seeing those colours on a World Cup stage and how important and resonant that is. But what a joy to see a Brazilian team run out and... You know, you would think they're going to be a team that want to move the ball rather than take it up the middle. Can't wait. What will that have for a continent, never mind a country? But on the wheelchair from USA, you know, again, they're making their debut in the tournament. The majority, I gather, of the players they're bringing over are not wheelchair rugby league athletes. A lot of them are veterans and Paralympians, but their slate is completely clean. No matter what they achieve, they are going back imbued with the fact that they've played in a World Cup. And the other interesting thing about that is we've always looked to take the men's game in first to spread rugby league, and it hasn't always been successful. So you look at all, and Gavin will tell you, through his wonderful book, No Helmets Required, the amount of times we've tried to start rugby league in a meaningful manner in America, and how many people say, oh, if you crack the American market, you're suddenly a global game. We may do it through the wheelchair team. And that's really exciting, I think, for people who have watched the sport for hundreds of years like we have.
I forgot to ask the audience at the start if any of them listen, because that's usually the first question. Does anyone listen to the podcast usually?
Oh, gee.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, 100% attendance, this is worrying. Have any of you been to a wheelchair game live?
No. See it on TV.
I mean, obviously, I've had one training session with Leeds, and I'm a massive expert on this.
I
know everything about them. I know everything, all the tactics, everything. Philly, it is a ridiculous sport to watch, and I'm trying to work out ways of describing it which don't come across as offensive, but it sometimes reminds me, it's like human dodgems. Just with the it's fast, there's no skill in dodgems, obviously, but the skill on show is amazing. It is rugby league, you just sat down and wheeling yourself around. There's no other, apart from minor differences, obviously, you're playing inside and not outside, but it's rugby league.
Yeah, very much so. It is exactly rugby league. There's some nuances, obviously, around things like the play of the ball and the tackle is affected by removing the tag from your shoulder. But you've still got all those elements of contact. You've still got the same tactical parts of the game. If anything, I would say it's significantly faster. You know, if we were coming away from exit on our own try line, we'd expect to complete a set of six tackles in 20 seconds, if not less. So speed-wise, it's more akin to touch rugby. So you've really got to be sharp and on the ball. Again, because it's five aside, you know, you can't be putting all these plays together where you're going to run a drop off into a wedge, and it's just not going to happen. So there's a lot of really exciting off the cuff stuff. And despite the fact that trade secret here, the chairs do take most of the impact. Obviously, it sounds really good, and it looks really
does sound. It's great watching people watching for the first time, and they think, oh, it's brutal. But then you spoil it by saying, it's just a chair. It's great fun to see people wince in pain. I think, they're all right.
I'm going to see my first games at the Copper Box. Excellent. I've not seen it in the flesh yet, so I'm really looking forward to
it. It's the vibrations you feel as well as the sound. It's sensational.
Yeah. And I finished, unfortunately for Wigan, our season finished in the semi-finals against Halifax, who went on to win the grand final. And there's a picture of me sat at the side of the court at the end of the game with my chair in four pieces. It kind of really summed up how the day went for me. But yeah, it kind of gives you an idea of some of the impacts that.
So Halifax, the champions here?
Yes, Halifax are the champions.
Pings to the heart, you know. Would they have gone to the Three Pigeons up the road there?
Quite possibly. Nice. Not all of them. They got a couple of guys that are dual registered with Catalan Dragons, so there was definitely a French feel to the team. But, I mean, that's about spreading the game, isn't it? You know, to get guys who are world-class players coming across to play in the domestic competition again, it's just spreading the game. Halifax will be grand final.
Well, they're my team. That's pretty good then, isn't it?
And this generally will be, for many people, the first time they see it on TV, because it's going to be on BBC Two, daytime TV. They're used to watching people gardening, apart from last week, because Monty Dunn got upset. Gardening and people buying and selling antiques, and then here's you lot coming on, bashing each other. It's going to be an amazing culture shock to them.
Yeah, I think it will be a shock to a lot of people. You know, people see rugby in the Paralympics, wheelchair rugby, and they make the assumption that it's going to be quite similar. So that's a volleyball where you can bounce it, throw it forwards. Once they see wheelchair rugby league, most people that watch it, as the gentleman attested to earlier, go, wow. It's instantly recognisable as rugby league. It just takes people's breath away generally. So the platform we've got on the back of this World Cup, you know, I can assure you all the clubs in the Super League and the Championship in the UK that have wheelchair teams at the moment are standing by for an influx of players. And that's exactly what the whole thing is about, isn't it?
That's one thing I've noticed here through BBC having the rights. And, you know, BBC Sport is this monster in terms of sports coverage. But to see, you know, a clip of rugby league, which normally wouldn't be on the BBC social media, the night the Joey Manu try against Lebanon, you know, first up where he's beaten four and tip over the top, you know, within 24 hours, 60,000 views and things like that, that's fantastic. You know, that's rugby league being shown at a sublime level, getting a run. I mean, to eyes that do not, you know, you can't help but have a, you know, you click and you open it and you see it and... Yeah, that's one of the benefits. That's going to happen for you guys. Are you getting nervous?
But yeah, there is going to be some amazing snaps that come out of this. There really are. As I said, you know, if it's an England-France final, some of the scenes will just be absolutely mind-blowing, and they will live long in people's memories, I can assure you.
You never underestimate what a jingoistic nation we are as well, desperate for success. You know, you only have to look at the Lionesses, you only have to look at the England football team failing, which is regarded as a success, you know, so they lose in finals and semi-finals and some other country goes bananas. But that shirt, you know, and I know you want to wear this time around, but that England shirt, if it's an England wheelchair team, is the only one of the three that wins a World Cup on terrestrial television, that will be massive for the sport, because people are desperate in this country for something, given... I wasn't going to mention politics, but given the situation the whole country is as a whole, you know, that shirt is you know, that's a big deal. So the fact we could potentially be in three finals, you know, and this maybe the best chance of winning.
We were having a discussion this morning about what would be the best final and result for the sport of rugby league. We were talking about the men's here. And there are some different opinions. I came to the conclusion that England v New Zealand would be the best final, because if we play Australia, we'll lose. If we play New Zealand,
very confident.
If we go into New Zealand, we beat them half the time, don't we? So we won't go in with an inferiority complex. So we might win. And if England win the World Cup, I think, from a biased opinion from based here, that would do more for the sport in the worldwide, you know, as in it would get more people interested than it would if anyone else won it.
Those convicts from the Southern Hemisphere, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, closely followed by New Zealand. But,
yes.
But I don't know.
But I think it goes back to what you were saying about that clip going viral.
Yeah.
it's stuff that we take for granted.
Mm.
So people saw last night the greatest try that was never scored, which we see every other week. Skill quite as good.
Well, we do,
that,
yeah, with their wingers.
But we see wingers doing ridiculously acrobatic things, and we don't blink.
What about the package of wingers just from the weekend? If you wanted to say hello aliens out there, or go to China with a package of what the wingers did over the weekend, starting with Josh Adokar, into Dom Young, into Dallin Mateni Zalesniak, into Brian Toto, into Daniel Tupou, pretty special. Like just a package of them doing their thing. Johnny Mitsias from Greece coming out with those big hits, and then in turn getting absolutely smashed twice, almost snapped in half. Gee, I was full of admiration for him. He was just an extraordinary performance by this bloke who's dead set third tier in Australia, but with the pride of the Greek jersey there representing his heritage. I think it's fantastic. The package of the wingers on BBC. And BBC, you're watching a little clip of the wingers from the weekend. Stick that out there on the and see how many
Lebanon
views you get for that.
Lebanon have got two virtually identical looking wingers as well.
Yeah.
Which I get confused sometimes
whether
it's
having to check who's that.
Misty or Mansour, you know, but they've got proper wingers. Yeah. So that makes that suddenly makes that team.
But the great thing about wingers is isn't that what we're all about? We're a handling sport.
Yeah.
So that is something we should
play. You say that this happens all the time, I'm thinking that this tournament is hard to avoid because of the BBC coverage, but that's coming from our biased opinion. I'd be very interested to know, I'm talking to people.
Well, I mean,
who
there are two other World Cups going on at the moment, aren't there? Now, granted, they're millions
One's
of miles
at
away.
4 o'clock in the morning. And
So we've got the T20 cricket and the Women's Rugby Union World Cup, and I don't know. They seem to be very low profile. I mean, this is the first time.
Oh, hang on a second. I was just walking through the mall in Wigan there. I was walking through the mall in Wigan, and there was a Sky stand up there. The cricket was there. I just saw Glenn Maxwell take a wicket as I walked through eating my Galloway's pie. There's a good plug. And I saw the cricket on. But you're right about that. I mean, we've got to make the most of it. I tell you, Steve Mascord, who we all know, absolute flag bearer for International Rugby League, made a great point to the naysayers on social media a couple of days ago. He said, you know, in reaction to lopsided score lines, is it Mickey Mouse, all of this, he said, if it gets a viewer in to watch just 15 minutes of the game and then turns off knowing that lopsided scoreline, it is still World Cup 1, you nil, because you've watched a game that you otherwise... You know, if Jamaica play, you're not watching them outside of the World Cup. You're not watching Lebanon, and they're not getting coverage.
I was going to say, I've got a lot of female friends who've had no interest in rugby league before, who've watched the games because it has been on the BBC. And I've been like, oh, look at Dom Young. They've been obviously watching Lebanon because of me. But now they're like, oh, I'd like to go to a game. So, you know, can we get involved? And I think it's getting way more females interested.
Well, that's interesting.
Interesting game.
Wait to the Women's World Cup start. Yeah. You know, it should get.
Yeah.
We've had in Australia with the women's state of origin. And they played it at North Sydney Oval there a few years ago. And drew a standalone game, New South Wales versus Queensland women's, tapping into the mate versus mate and all of that sort of thing, the principles that you either maroon or blue. It's as simple as that on Origin night. The number of females that go, and young girls there on the night was just quite incredible. Do you think that the Women's World Cup can do the same, that parents would be compelled to take their daughters to watch the sport, even if they don't play? Would they be...
I definitely think, I mean, look, you have to look at the Lionesses and what that's done for the sport in England, but I don't think it necessarily needs to be the women's game that gets girls interested.
No.
You could just be just as interested in the men's game as a young girl and really love that game and then be inspired to play. So I think the two can be really important.
But they can see then that if they do have an attraction to the sport, hang on, there's a pathway I can play for my country.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, like
that's
it's...
why Casey Badger was so important last night, because even if you don't play, you could turn out and be a match official. And we shouldn't even be surprised at her performance, because she wouldn't have been selected in the first place if she wasn't one of the top referees in the world. But she was fantastic.
I think the best thing about that was that I almost didn't notice.
No,
exactly. I noticed. Obviously,
that's
I knew in advance that two out of three of, officials on the field were females. But it was just an irrelevance, which is progress.
There was a moment in the coverage where it went from sideline official, female, shot of Casey Badger, to trainer on the ground was female. I thought that was a poignant moment in the contest. Don't take this the wrong way. I had Casey Badger in my room after 10 o'clock the night before.
It's okay, it's okay, Andrew, because there are people...
For an interview. my studio... my studio is set up there, and I interviewed Casey on our radio show, Back to Australia. It was 10:05. We're staying in the same building. She came in, and you've got just a really impressive, confident official. It does not matter, male or female. She is a confident and more than competent official. But here's the other thing. Massive fan. Massive fan of the game, who in her own world is now living the dream. Just the same as I am living the dream as a commentator, she is living her dream. She said she was floored when they said you were calling the test. You know, she had no idea when she came over here she would be doing a men's test. So she's a fan who has followed a pathway to now referee a rugby league test, be the first. I think that's incredibly inspiring. Incredibly inspiring.
Probably point out, probably less politically correct than we are here, but I've had one or two texts from male friends of mine who are interested in watching the Brazilian women's team. I mean, make of that what you will. But it, again, if that's eyes on the sport that aren't watching the sport, because it's a country that plays football, you take it even down that level, Brazil play rugby league? Yeah, Brazil are now playing rugby league.
However, un-PC it sounds, that is a thing people are going to watch on TV because it's something they're interested in looking. Oh, what do they look like?
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
some women will watch men on TV to see what they look like.
I was at a meeting today about that. And they've already sold over 10,000 tickets for it, but the bulk of the people that will be there, because it's an afternoon kickoff, will be schools.
Yeah.
There's been special offers to, and it's mainly girls that want to be there, so you're getting a whole generation of kids that are going to experience women's rugby league life for the first time. And
I went to two games of the women's Euros this summer, and it was the first time I go to a lot of football. The crowd was entirely different to anything I'd ever seen before. The makeup of the crowd, there were far more women, far more kids. And the blokes were different as well. You know, it was just better behaved, but just they'd gone to just enjoy it. I came away saying I wouldn't want that to be my only experience of the sport. I like some different, more aggressive passion as well. But it was refreshing, and I thought there's a market there. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that happen.
Should
with
point
women's
out,
what
ticket
league.
Prices, which has become this hot potato on social media. I really don't want to go down that road here, but I bought ticket. I'm going to that doubleheader in Leeds and all the next day in York with my lad, and his ticket was £2.21, and my ticket was £20.21, and that's a good seat in the centre. So it is affordable. There are no excuses. You can get a cheap ticket to this World Cup and watch the best sport in the world in a great stadium, in a great atmosphere. So
they learned that, Nigel, from the Women's Euros. You know, they've said it was a fiver for kids and 10 quid for adults, and there weren't many people at the beginning, and by the end it was nearly full. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, it is.
The winner really should be rugby league. And you know, when we talk about the women's game or the men's game or even the wheelchair game, it's rugby league. Yeah. And I've done a lot of coaching in youth and junior rugby over the years. And if you talk to some of the young girls that we're talking about getting more interested and more involved, because we're going to see the Women's Rugby League World Cup on national television. If you speak to some of those young kids and you ask them about, say, Jodie Cunningham or Amy Hardcastle, they wouldn't say Jodie Cunningham is a women's rugby league player. She's a rugby league player.
Mm.
And if you speak to people in Catalan Dragons environments and ask them about Nicolas Clausel, they wouldn't say he's a wheelchair rugby league player. Mm. He's a rugby league player.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, with a slightly different lens, it's rugby league, isn't it? Rugby league.
The Australian women's team has a player, Ali Brigginshaw. She's reached a status in the game that she's defined as, you know, one of the best rugby league players in the country, and full stop. In fact, I'd probably go as far as saying, without knowing what the Kangaroos are going to do here in the men's, the best Australian side here at this World Cup is the women's side. You know, they are the best. I don't see how they can possibly be beaten, but you know, the infrastructure of the Australian women's team now with an NRLW competition live on TV every game, the profile, the state of origin of the women's, it's put them light years ahead of other nations around the world. But that's still a good thing, because this is something to aspire to. This model has been put in place in Australia. We start off with 14 comp, 16 comp. We're expanding to it. It's been softly, and go there and find their place. And just through having that little bit of exposure, more numbers have come. Then on a different scale, here at the World Cup, you know, the PNG Orchids playing, they're an incredible story. But there are young girls across there in Papua New Guinea living the most basic existence that will be so inspired by this team. The scoreboard could say 100-0. They want to be on that team that's out there playing for their nation, because this is the beauty of sport, but this is the beauty of rugby league and expansion, that we can embrace this across wheelchair, across the women's, across the physical disability rugby league at the moment. I say to you, there must be some young fellas out there doing it really tough, you know, life-changing injuries and all those sorts of things, that you can show them a way. You can give them an incredible something to focus on. You must feel a bit of that expectation on your shoulders.
Absolutely. Just to get more people into the game, to give people opportunities. And that's essentially what happened to me. I saw on a rugby league magazine show on television some guys just down the road from me in Wigan, and he said, oh, wheelchair rugby. And I thought, I know what this is. Volleyball, bounced on the floor. I thought, that's rugby league in wheelchairs. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
And everybody else has got the same or a similar story. For one reason or another, you thought that aside from maybe some coaching, you're having using the game shut to you, and then all of a sudden you're back in and you're playing, and there's opportunities and there's pathways.
Mm. And those muscles aren't stick-ons, are they? They're
off a level. Yeah.
I wish I had a level.
Sun's out, guns out. Sun's out, guns out. Wow.
Can I ask something, just based on the wheelchair thing, the last two comments really brought together. Australian women are going to be terrifyingly good.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep.
England and France, you expect to be way ahead of the others in the wheelchair.
Yes.
Is it the wheelchair tournament where Europe are going to fly a flag? Or, because in the men's, I think, you know, this is the big negative topic, I think, to bring up. Are the Northern Hemisphere, i.e. European teams, are we going to be humiliated by the end of this? In that England are the only ones who are going to get to the quarterfinals. Are we going to look at this as 1982 kangaroo tour all over again and say we are a million miles away from there?
It's the debate we always have, but it partly comes down.
But this is going to be more dramatic, you know, the us and them is.
Well, the only good thing I think at the moment is IMG are involved in reshaping the sport. And they have categorically said that International Rugby League is one of the platforms they're looking to build. That's a low-hanging fruit. They've absolutely kept the mid-season international over here. They want to build England and France as a rivalry of, you know, moving in the men's game, certainly towards some kind of parity. But it's doing that in, obviously, wheelchair. There is parity. And women's, it's getting there as well. I think that if we can come out of this and actually have a commitment to International Rugby League and somebody to say, what do we do with Wales? They've been really heroic in the group games that we've seen. Somebody said on social media last night, it'd be great if Wales had a Super League team. Well, they did. It was called Celtic Crusaders. They made the playoffs. Now, Brian Noble was the coach. Some of the great players played for the Celtic Crusaders. But we, as a game, didn't have the patience or the backing or the finance or the desire to give them a development pathway to say, it's not about a club, it's about how we enhance international competition as well. If that debate starts happening out of this World Cup, you know, I know you're very close to Scotland, and the question for Scotland must surely be, you can only improve if you reinvigorate your domestic competition. I don't know how you're going to do that. I don't know how many teams you need to do that. I don't know where you start to do that. But that is a question that possibly needs asking.
I would say there's two different things there, because you've got domestic competitions in different countries that may actually have very little to do with the international elite men's team, which is almost, in some cases, luck in its cyclical. Who, with a Scottish grandfather, Lebanese dad, whatever, happens to be playing in the NRL or Super League. And if you've got two, you're in trouble. If you've got 10, you've got a chance. You know, are we, at some point, we're going to have to move away from that. Otherwise, we're just doing the same thing every 4 years. Because at the moment, the domestic competitions in most countries have no bearing whatsoever on the national team.
Mm.
It's two different things. And in many cases, the national team is doing nothing to develop the professional players. Mm. Because they're spending their whole year with Huddersfield or St George Illawarra, not with their national team.
Is PNG. Clearly, yeah. Having the Hunters in a professional absolutely, competition,
yeah. And then Fiji. Raised,
well, you'd hope will so. Happen. I don't think that's happened
no,
yet.
It will.
But if you were to say to invigorate rugby league in Scotland, we need a team in League One.
Yeah.
How are we going to go about that? And there's got to, you know, we're already saying to French teams from 2024, you have to have a certain number of domestic players in your match day squad.
You probably need teams at different levels, don't you? Like in Wales, you need a team in League One. And you need a team in a championship, and then ideally you need a team in Super League. But those first two, to me, I think you need a step from League One to the Championship, and then they go off to wherever they can play at.
Mm. Northern Italy would be great, wouldn't it? Have a side there, and you know, we go down that path.
I think it's been spoken about before.
Tasbateri,
a generation behind that.
Yeah,
but if there's no pathway, how do you expect to produce any players?
Because I'm off to the women's launch on Friday, and I don't want to upset anyone by making predictions, because as we know, in 2018 I predicted Castleford would win, Leeds won the grand final. 2019, Castleford will win, Leeds won the grand final. 2022, York will win, Leeds won the grand final. Mm. Oh, no, I predicted York wouldn't win, didn't I? Because I upset Kelsey Gentles and all the squad who liked my tweet saying they wouldn't win anything, it would be between Saints and Leeds. I think the only year I got right was when Saints won everything in 2021. But the Gillaroos, by the way, Kangaroos is, you know, it's great. Gillaroos. We've got to get some better names in Australia, because it's a bit...
Well, the toughest one, the hardest one that people can accept in Australia is the Socceroos. You go to a soccer fan, and the soccer fan says, it's football. I say, but hang on, your team's called the Socceroos. They say, no, but it's football. I say, even though your team's called the Socceroos, I'm going to call it soccer. No, you call it soccer, it's football. But your team's called the Socceroos. And it's just like who's on first. So it just goes around and round in circles. We've got the Kookaburras. We've got the Diamonds, we've got a few other, I have to run through, the Wallaroos.
In fairness, it is about the Red Roses is a terrible name for the England women's rugby union team, but I don't follow that anyway. So.
Yeah.
But this could be Australia's Women's World Cup equivalent of the 82 Kangaroo Tour. I'm concerned about England, but I don't want to upset them because I will be speaking to them on Friday. And, I might have upset them already by things I've said on this podcast in the past, but we've had a game against PNG with the... I mean, I'm reading Danica's column in the magazine. She might win an award next week. She might be an award winner. She might reply to my messages one day. PNG could beat England in that final game because they've got that experience in the NRL. We need to send some of our best players down under, but we've got no money, so...
Maybe. It's good. Look, just the fact that we've come that way, it's getting better. It's getting better. And I can remember just calling the women's game when we used to have a pre-season nines tournament. They would put on Australia versus New Zealand... nines games for the women's, basically to give the teams a rest between quarterfinals and final stage. So they were more exhibition, and I make no apology for saying that. That's not all that long ago. Now they are standalone. Now they are hundreds of thousands of viewers watching in Australia. Hundreds of thousands of viewers watching women's rugby league. It happens. Talking about pathways. Now support, making some allowances, and it can happen. It can happen. So this is all another step in the journey.
There's a good reason why I don't, when I put old programmes up on Twitter, that I don't put some of the cartoons that were in some of the 80s and 90s programmes, which may have depicted women, not just in rugby league. The less said, the better. Mm. England might not win the World Cup this year, but Abigail, when you're playing, are we going to win the World Cup when you're in the England squad? Yeah.
No.
Right, so that's good. That's good. If not, just find some heritage and go play for somebody else. Have we got any Australian heritage?
No.
It's halfway through this thing where I realised, I know Andrew Voss's voice from somewhere, but I can't picture where it is. Not just the computer game, the video game.
Yes, wow.
Hull Sharks and all that stuff.
Oh, man.
It's got abuse of it.
It's like going into a phone box for 3 days and recording yourself reading out the phone book. Like, it's seriously mind-numbing. You go, Kaplan! The budgerigar! The budgerigar! The wolves, the spacemen, the spacemen! And you're just doing, 106, 107, 108. You're doing all these slides over and over and over. Yeah, no, it was interesting time. My work is so small, and when I've, like my sons, I've got three boys, when they've played the game, I can't believe how it all comes together, because I know that that is like, that one sentence may have six components to it from six, like, how does that work? Anyway, yes, it was a bit of, I can't say it's fun doing it, but hearing the end result is...
That's immortal. You're immortalised forever.
I give people headaches, that's right.
This is the
massive
great
headaches. Mums, dads.
Now we are coming towards the end of... And this is the great thing about the way this World Cup is set up. We're coming towards the end of the group stage of the men's, and we will lose the likes of Greece and so on and so forth, who we've had great stories with in so far. But then the Women's World Cup starts, and the Wheelchair World Cup starts, and we've got all those stories again in the group stage. What are you most looking forward to for the rest of the tournaments?
Ooh, oh, so much. I'll just start off and pass over and just say everything. I do mean that. I mean, I know Samoa were embarrassing in the first game. No apology again for saying that. They were embarrassing. This is a team that had state of origin quality players. I mean, the strongest Samoan squad ever got beaten by 60. They get it together again in their final pool match and run into Tonga. Could be better than any final. If they both bring their A game to the table, that could be the best game of the tournament, and that's in the quarter-final stage. I say, PNG, if they get past Cook Islands and run into England, I love watching Papua New Guinea play. On the other side of the draw, the potential of Australia-New Zealand semi-final? Wow. Like, you know, I just think this is a hell of a World Cup that we've got. 2 weeks in, but what we've got ahead of us, boy, don't miss a game, don't miss a tackle.
What a great job Kintari did when he made the draw. You know, he doesn't get enough credit. What a job!
Leave the royal family out.
Yeah,
well, we don't know who's playing. Get involved with rugby final game. We don't know who's going to be in charge.
I would say the same thing. I don't know if you're going to ask me, but I'd say the same thing as Andrew.
I was going to say
Tonga Samoa, Australia New Zealand semi final, England New Zealand final. And Australia women playing a whole new sport to everyone else, and seeing the wheelchair elite athletes. Really looking forward to all of those things. I'm wondering where the shock's going to be, because I wrote all this stuff about there is always a shock in the group stage, and we haven't had one yet. Although Samoa's performance was shocking in the scoreline. The scoreline was a shock, wasn't it? We've had a few scorelines that were shocks, but not results. I was about to say, on paper, Lebanon beating Ireland. Ireland were basically a Super League team, and Lebanon are a New South Wales Cup team, and they beat them convincingly. That was a shock, but not to the outside world or anything. And maybe the shock will come in the quarterfinals. And I mean, will there be a surprise there? It would be amazing to get through a World Cup without there being... If you predict a World Cup in advance, you're never right, are you? Something goes wrong. So far, the groups are all going to end up how I thought they were going to end up. So there's got to be a twist somewhere. Lebanon, maybe?
I'm hoping if I can get the chance to speak to some of the players on Friday, but one of the questions I would have for them is, like, if Lebanon does play Australia in the quarterfinals, how is that for them? Because, you know, having dual nationality, you know, and Josh Mansell has already played for Australia. I guess Mitchell Moses probably wants to represent Australia as well.
Having that mixture,
you know, some people have asked me, if Lebanon played England, who would you support? You know, I've got an English mother, but Lebanese dad. I'm really keen to see how that one plays out, and with a passion, can really push them forward in that. So that's, you know, for me, that's an interesting next bit. You know, if they beat Jamaica, hopefully, and that becomes the next game. So.
Do people in the real world get upset if someone sang both anthems? Because I know Connie Winfield-Hill said she would if England played Australia, which I'm not sure they're necessarily willing to talk.
I sang both anthems at Scotland.
Yeah. Oh,
there you go. Well, I didn't know the words to the Italian one.
Well, yeah, but it's good. They have got a top team anthem of Italy.
Yeah, it's great.
I can't remember who's my favourite anthem of the world. I think it's Papua New Guinea, just because it keeps saying Papua New Guinea. I mean, that's, you've got to get the brand in there. That's
2000 World Cup, if you remember, at the Boulevard, Russia, Australia, another string of the bow, both anthems came on at the same time. And there you had the two teams facing off against each other, and there were eight Australians in the Russian side, Ian Rubin, the captain. They're looking at each other, going, what do we do? They were I don't know how it happened, but they were playing at the same time.
That summed up the 2000 World Cup in 1 minute.
Summed up the Boulevard.
Well, the Boulevard. I'll tell you, there's another little story about that. I was calling with Tony Ray, who you all know over here. But Tony, with hair that's... We're living on now. The hairline, a bit like Sturlo at some point of his career. And a rumour had gone around Hull that Sturlo was there that night. And someone then, it went like Chinese whispers, they caught a glimpse. You know, you climb the gantry and you're up on the roof at the old Boulevard. And someone caught a glimpse of the head and said, it's Sturlo. And then suddenly during the game, there's, hey, Sturlo! Sturlo! And I said to Tony, just give him a wave. So he's giving him a wave. He's going to wave, oh, Sturlo! You know? And then after the game, it's sleet, it's cold, like it's -7. We've just watched 110-4. I'm climbing down the ladder down the back. Your hand's almost sticky because they're so cold. And I thought, is Sturlo coming down? Has he been down yet? I said, oh, he might be down in a moment. And I've walked down. And I've walked down through the stand, through the shrine to Peter Sterling that used to be under the stand on the veneer walls. And I can only think of those poor people who stood out there for maybe 60 minutes. What happened to Sturlo? They were still there 2 hours later waiting for Sturlo to come down. Didn't happen. Tony Ray, the impersonator. True story. True story.
Is that the most popular Tony Ray's ever been with? I mean, I like it. I'm just...
The question is...
Is that the most popular he's ever been?
Tony Ray?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
I like it.
It was a North Sydney Bear back home. If you played for the North Sydney Bears, the perennial losers, two competition wins, 21-22, everyone had a soft spot for the Bears. So if you were a Bear, that was your rite of passage to being liked or not being hated. You're a Bear. He was a Bear.
I mean, now should just... Has anyone ever been... misrepresented as a rugby league player in the past? I mean, obviously when I played at school I was definitely misrepresented.
Right. No, but on that note, when I left the Italy training this morning and I said I was coming on a panel with you,
yes,
and Adam Capovia, who used to play for Italy and is now part of the backroom staff, he said, oh, say hi to Vossi for me. He said, I was mistaken for Vossi recently. I was in a bar and people kept coming over and saying, can I have a photo? This is, in St Helens somewhere, with the Italy gear on.
Yeah.
So, can I have a photo? Yeah, yeah. They must think I'm a player. This is weird. And then he thought, why are these people asking for a picture with me?
Right.
And then someone came on FaceTime and was going to his mate, look here, look who I'm with. And then he heard him say, that's not him. He said, it is, it's Vossi. And Adam said, I'm not Andrew Voss.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, George Clooney down the Anfield, Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio here. I mean, we all get, mixed up sometimes. Right? We do get, that can happen. But if there's impersonators of me, well, that could be dangerous. It could be very, very dangerous. But seriously, for the rest of the World Cup, I'll be out and about. And if you want to have a chat, Just come up to me at the game. Well, let's just talk football and... I'm not pints. I don't actually drink. Pies.
This is a Wakefield accent.
Pies. I'll have 20. Did you say pies? From pies. No, I pay my way to no free pies. No, I pay because that keeps impartial judgment. But no, seriously, I find research for games and background and history of clubs and venues you're going to, the best source is the fans. You speak to people that were there that could be third generation, whose grandfather took their dad to a game and the dad took the son to the game. I mean, I love hearing those sorts of stories.
Did we pay for those fish and chips, Phil? Was that a freebie thing?
Well, what freebies?
No, it was a contest, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They took the kudos that we were there to eat ourselves stupid.
Yeah. It was myself, Phil Kaplan over there, Gary Schofield, Rugby League Hall of Famer, freebies. And Mark Wilson off the telly.
Freebies.
Having the giant fish and chips and sides. And Phil won. Mm. Phil was the winner.
So this Bali wins the round.
Just on Voss's comment there about... going out and about into different places. Some of the Italian guys were saying how much they're looking forward to the weekend playing at St Helens, because they've obviously been up at Newcastle, not a rugby league place. Mm. I think it was a mistake taking the two Fiji games there. I understood the first one, but the last two. I know they were supposed to be in Workington, weren't they? in the new ground that hasn't been built. But, you know, they said they drove along the M62 or whatever, and they saw all these names of rugby league towns. It was magic to the Australians there.
100%.
And yet they weren't playing in any of them. Yeah. Why are we going past all these places?
Can I tell you that last weekend, caught the train, I'm staying in Manchester, Wigan to Warrington, get out of train station at Warrington and start the walk to the ground. I mean,
it's special,
magic,
isn't it?
Magic. Magic.
Yeah,
and there's fans
there. It's special.
And it was the same with the last World Cup, a trip to Perpignan. The cab driver, I catch the cab out of town and he just pulls up as we get about 2 km from the ground, the glow of the lights and there's a bit of traffic. And you go, no. And I took it as, I get out. He goes no further. He's not going into the traffic. It's the best thing he could ever done. He dropped me off and I walked with fans and I couldn't understand what they're saying, but it was like being at Leichhardt Oval in Australia, going to Tigers out there with the flags, the same passion. You're picking up that vibe, the expectation. Tap into that. Sing it into my veins, you know. That's the Rugby League World Cup, you know, essence of it across all the competitions. You know, there's nowhere else in the world I'd rather be right now than right here.
I got out of the station at St Helens and I think, hang on, that's Welsh accents.
Yeah, good to
that. I mean, there weren't hundreds of people, but there were dozens of people chatting away. And I thought, they're all Welsh.
Yeah.
I'm coming to watch Wales.
We talk about the value of social media. But one of the most heartening things I've seen so far in the opening 2 weeks is the bar in Athens, which the Greek rugby league put on social media. So they score their first try in the World Cup. I would imagine a few people in the bar would be Greek rugby league people, but the bulk of them won't have been. And they're all leaping up and down.
Yeah.
Apparently they were in the bar again this week, but 12 of them are coming over this weekend to watch Greece at Bramall Lane.
Yeah.
And you just think, that's a value that you can't put on as this World Cup.
Get yourself in a village in Papua New Guinea when Rhys Martin lines up his 42nd kick in a row. I mean, it's like when he kicked it the other night, I still do radio reports to Papua New Guinea and they get me to do the promos in Pidgin and all this sort of thing. I mean, they will go nuts. I mean, they will go nuts. I mean, Rhys Martin, Alex Johnston playing for them, you know, in phenomenal try scorer in the NRL. Justin Ollam has become an absolute superstar for them. He's one of the best players in the NRL. He's a PNG international. Look out, England. Quarterfinals if they get there.
I think that's the interesting thing about Lebanon as well. It maybe isn't about players and it isn't about domestic competition, because that is going to be disrupted because of the political situation in the country. It's going to be people of standing and influence and potential sponsors and politicians who are watching this nation. I think you talk about, you know, is there going to be a shock? Might not be a shock to us, but having Lebanon in a quarter final, playing against Australia on the BBC, which people of influence are going to come out of that and suddenly become advocates for rugby league?
Yeah.
They might not be able to directly support it in terms of, oh, well, we'll set up a club in Beirut. That may not be the time to do that. But if you've then suddenly got an embassy or a business person or an entrepreneur or whoever it might be who is imbued with the spirit of what Lebanon did in a Rugby League World Cup and wed themselves to the sport in some way, how good is that?
And for very little money can take a team and say, right, we're on the world stage in a quarter final. What will it take to make us better? Not a lot.
Well, the other thing is, the next World Cup's in France, which has a massive cultural link to Lebanon. If Lebanon make the quarterfinals, the big victory there is they've automatically qualified
of course,
for the next one.
Yes.
And then you think you've got 3 years to build this relationship between the Lebanese community and the French.
Might be borrowing your scarf, actually. I mean, okay, you know, in advance, I think I need something.
Expat community in France, so, you know, being an old mandate. So, yeah, I did actually think about that. That's a really interesting point.
You just sold a 2 week trip to France.
I was thinking of maybe
six week
World Cup tour for it.
Well, PNG is the ultimate for me. You know, one day I'll get you and
But that brings up the subject. I'm always accused of being negative. When are the next game? When are these teams playing again next?
That's right. In between.
I mean,
the lack of respect from the Kangaroos.
Well, I think the other point on that is, when are we going to announce where the 2029 World Cup is? Because every other sport is serious at international level. And we've seen all of the people that are mentioning to us who aren't rugby league fans that they're caught up in the spirit of a World Cup. We know the next one's in France. Great. Where are we going in 2020?
But knowing one in advance is progress. That's progress.
What if England, and it's the biggest if ever, but what if England would actually win the Men's World Cup, right? how many people are going to want to go and see that team? I want to go and see Jack Wells and Domino and all these young, vibrant, exciting superstars. And the game is going to turn around, as it always does, and go, yeah, we're working on an international programme, and then nothing happens.
Absolutely.
Or it will be a game...
Play one international. One international.
I think that's the other thing, that we announced the Magic Weekend fixtures after the game in Newcastle. And to be honest, I don't know about anybody here, I'm not bothered about the domestic game at the moment.
Well, Lee Leopard, just park that one for a bit.
The whole thing, you know, for 5 or 6 weeks, yeah, forget it. But if you'd have announced the day after...
Yeah.
That the Kangaroos are coming at the end of 2023, and the first test is at Newcastle, and tickets are on sale on Monday.
So
you'd have sold it out,
to Nigel's point there, if England win the World Cup, how are we going to take advantage of that? When are England going to play at home, and who are they going to play?
Now, and can I buy a shirt?
The women's Euros. They'd obviously lined. This may have passed you by. They'd obviously lined up. What if we win?
Yeah.
And they'd lined up America to come to. It was Wembley, wasn't it? To come to Wembley 6 weeks later, and they won. It happened, and they sold 75,000, 80,000 seats, whatever it was. What are we going to do if we win it? Are we going to play the combined nations or a France B team in Lee? In next June,
Is the answer.
Or are we going to say we're going to play at choose a ground? But are we going to try and get 25,000 people celebrating us? Are we going to pay Tonga or whoever? Well, we can't because there's no mid-season break in the NRL. So all we've got is France.
But we need to announce the tour at the end of 2023. Yeah. It needs to coincide with a wheelchair test series and a women's test series.
Are you going to come back with the Kangaroos then next year?
Well, it's all in the hand of Rights Broadcasters. I mean, we do, you know, COVID sort of exacerbated, you know, doing things remotely, and that sort of thing. That's why I feel so fortunate to be here. I'm the only commentator from my network that was sent over. So, you know, I'm here and getting to call the matches. So that's why I've got to start sowing some seeds for 2025 for France. I mean, I really need to get here. But I'm like you. It's between the World Cups, and I, you know, there is a lack of respect for a number of years there. What, Fiji made semi-finals, 3 years in a row? Australia playing Fiji in between World Cups? No. Look, we just don't give them that platform. And, yeah, I just think that we've created a beast over in Australia called State of Origin, and it's first, second and third.
Great.
Yeah, it's great. Of course it is. But the casualty is international rugby league because it's such a priority. So let's hope we get it right in between World Cups.
Because it's 50 years since Great Britain or England beat Australia in a test series. Did Australia have to find something that took the place of international rugby league because it lost its credibility, and that's why Origin perhaps got the kick start?
Queensland got tired of losing, so they formed that State of Origin.
But the strange thing is that the especially in the Pacific, the ignoring of international rugby league doesn't make any sense commercially to me. I know the games at the moment don't make a profit, but they talk about what has rugby league got to replace, to do our version of the 100. You know, IMG have talked about it, a new event, all this sort of thing. To me, international rugby league is the 100. It is the big bash. It's all-star teams playing against each other for 6 weeks. You know, you are bringing together a collection of people to play under the advantage, you know, under a national banner for 6 weeks. How is that not commercially viable? You know, it seems madness to me that it can't make sense for Australia, Tonga, Fiji, Samoa to play.
Bang on the door. We have to keep doing it. We have to keep doing it.
How can it not make sense to play? Make NRL, make money out of it.
I mean, we say State of Origin is the worst thing that's happened to international rugby league, but the worst thing State of Origin gives us is every year we get the same internal debate about bringing back Yorkshire versus Lancashire, which two places that don't really exist. And would be rubbish anyway, because it always is when it comes back. Before we open it up to the audience, who are going to be full of questions, I know. What's the Lebanese equivalent of a pie at a rugby league game?
Oh, I guess like a falafel wrap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get the old Lebanese sandwich. Sandwich, a kebab.
I would probably try one in Lee. No. There was someone did put on Instagram. It was a fan, and it was after the game on Sunday, and it said, "Flamboyant, fueled by hummus."
Nice.
That sounds like foreign luck. We don't have that anyway. Audience questions, have you got any?
Just by chance, I landed on the PDRL World Cup on Sunday. Apparently, the World Cup going on there just seemed to be very, very low key. You'd have thought there'd be a lot of stories to tell from Adam Hills, and just seems to be very much a backwater, isn't it?
Well, I think Adam Hills is getting his story told, but we were saying on the way in, Phil, it's kind of a. It wasn't planned to be part of this World Cup.
No.
It appears to have become part of it late on, and
that is correct.
Probably has been a victim of that, in a sense.
But the mere fact that, and I found obliged on Sunday night when I was working with Andrea Dobson, and we were talking about that in commentary. I mean, that is a stepping stone. And Adam would concede that. You know, there's it's an entirely different level, but the powerful nature of just that. The fact that we're talking about it ever so briefly, if you like, but we'll get a clip here and there, that's part of the stepping stone that may inspire someone. So, you know, to have the expression World Cup attached to it, yeah. I think it's going to move people.
Yeah, I'd probably make the comparison to the 2008 Festival of World Cups, which included the first ever wheelchair World Cup. I wouldn't say it was unplanned, but it was fairly last minute. Quite impromptu, didn't have a lot of momentum behind it, but then what it did do was it just kicked things off massively from a sport that was in its infancy to a sport that in this country alone we've got three different leagues up and running now, very similar situation in France, and I would say probably the PDRL World Cup's in a similar kind of space where it's not really been part of the planning for several years, it's been quite impromptu, but it's jumped onto the back of the wider World Cups and it's going to really blossom on the back of it and it's going to kick off.
I think also with that rugby league's expectations are often, I think, blown out of all proportion. You know, a physical disability match was talked about on the BBC and there was a clip of it. That's not happening in any other sport.
No, that's
not happening in the biggest sport in the world, football. There's no coverage of physical disability events, as far as I'm aware. We're way ahead of the curve, so to speak, with a lot of these things.
The clip I've seen of Adam Hills, and it was great to see him devastated that Australia had been thrashed. Long may that continue. He was talking about, because we've established it at this World Cup, it'll have to be part of the next World Cup, and the World Cup after that. And that's it. You know, the fact that two nations have travelled halfway around the world to play in it, and there will be a lot of footage of the final. There's games being played now, actually. Tuesday afternoon is the second round of games. There will be coverage of the final next Sunday.
But we were saying, Phil, just before, weren't we, that there's almost too much going on at the moment, and I'm slightly concerned that the women's and the wheelchair might not get the coverage that they hope for other than TV coverage, because it's all going on at the same time. But this is a natural progression that maybe at the next World Cup or the one after, that they're done one after the other rather than all at the same time. And we use the wheelchair and the women's and the PDRL to build up some interest to then have the men's. You know.
On the contrary, I'm quite excited to be... I'm calling all the Australian women's games up in York and I'm quite excited that it is part of the... At the same time that I can live and breathe rugby league for the whole week. I'm pretty happy about that. I don't want a day off. I'm devastated after tonight. Two nights off. What am I meant to do? If I didn't have the radio, so I'd just be sitting in my room reading the 40-20 program. What would I do? So I don't want any nights off during the World Cup. I want to capitalise on this period of time and call it total rugby league celebration. And for PDRL, their goal, I'm sure, and I'm not an official of their sport, but they are looking to increase participation numbers. So they're at an entirely different level to what we're talking. The men's and women's has gone way past that now. The wheelchair's going past that. PDRL's down at that level, so they're just getting participation. So any exposure really is... It is the classic saying, any publicity is good publicity for the PDRL.
It's the awareness, isn't it? There's teammates of mine, a clubmate of mine, a young lad called Ben Seward, who plays for Wigan, who's playing for England. He's had one arm for as long as I can remember. I've known him since he was a young lad, running around on a Sunday morning playing rugby league with everybody else. And PDRL has given him a platform and a pathway to become an England international.
To represent his country.
There'll be people out there, whether they're young children, older adults, to see somebody who's got one arm picking the ball up from dummy half, tucking it in, away they go, and the fact
Brilliant.
That they can adapt the sport to be able to include so many different people, it's just that awareness of the opportunities, really.
Yeah.
Still, they haven't invented a type of rugby league for people who are rubbish at rugby league, which is the one I'm waiting for. Rugby league for everyone apart from me is very disappointing.
Yeah. Not competition for places there, though.
You may not,
you might not make the cut.
Like, not good enough at anything World Cup.
Not bad
enough.
Even get in the team, yeah. Not bad enough to get in.
I mean, the three trophies on the front of the magazine, and they all look wonderful, and they are. And that's the one thing about the Lionesses Trophy, it's dreadful. There's a lot of dreadful trophies in sport, and that trophy, the Lionesses thing, was awful.
Well, we have, in our domestic football competition, the A-League, the soccer in Australia, we hand out a toilet seat. It's this round toilet seat. You can actually plonk on the top of a toilet and do your business on it. They hand out the toilet seat as the trophy. I don't know whose idea that was.
The league issued.
Have a look. Google A-League Australia Trophy and you'll see a dunny seat. Seat of a dunny is the trophy. There you go.
See, rugby league's not that bad. It could be worse. Any other questions about it? Toilet seats or pies?
I think just the staying, really. When you think back to the World Cup in 1988 and 1992, which is five teams played on a league system, and what we have today is truly humbling and amazing, and it's actually qualifying matches to get into the World Cup now. If you thought about 25, 30 years, how many countries would be playing, it's just absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant point. Brilliant point. Exactly. And I can... Rugby Union, their World Cup. I live close to a suburban ground called Concord Oval. I think it was 1986 Rugby World Cup. They were playing a semi-final at this suburban ground, that old 11,000. And I certainly don't. But I'm just saying that you're exactly right. Pathway bigger. As disappointed as I was for the last couple of years of COVID that this got pushed back a year, how good is it that we do get another one? And now we only have to wait 3 years to the next one. It's in France. There's never been more interest in the Rugby League World Cup than this one. It's because of the number of NRL players playing, that normally a Rugby League World Cup, when it's on, no one watches. They're not interested, and they sort of buy in, quarter-final, semi-final, get interested. We had awareness of this World Cup more than we've ever had before. And a lot of publicity, again, any publicity is good publicity. We were blowing up about the numbering system. For a weekly, that was the talkback topic. Every second call on my radio show every morning was blowing up about the numbering system. And I thought, how good's this? We're talking about, we're passionate, we're invested in it, so that's good.
For the record, it's absolutely
mad. Oh, it's mad. It's mad. Nathan Cleary gets to play the position of halfback that the greats, Sturlow and Ricky Stewart and Alfie Langer and those that have worn, and his first test is in number 14. No, please.
Also, genuinely,
leave me out of that.
I watch pretty much every NRL game. I'm all over it, And I'm occasionally having to do a double take to work out who it is taking the ball in a position that will be a centre or a second row or a dummy half or whatever, because it doesn't tally with the number.
Yeah.
And I know who the players are. So if you don't know who the players
are,
it's madness. And it's arrogance from Australia to have done it in the first place, and somebody should have stamped down on it and said,
I don't know how Mel allowed it.
It's all everybody else. No, this is what we're doing, and do it now, you arrogant. Sorry.
I sat there.
It's got to be an England-New Zealand final.
Anyway, Australia Fiji. I sat there on the left-hand side from a scrum. I saw the 7, 8, 9. The 9's on the wing. The 8 was the 10. And you're right. I call them every week, and I'm having to. I was sort of calling in my head, as I'm watching the game. I'm thinking, hang on, there's that. Is he? What's he? 5, 9.
It's an insult.
And it doesn't educate.
Great Australian
players. Doesn't educate.
Like Andre Ettingshausen or whoever, or Peter Sterling, or Wally. Those great players who wore those iconic shirt numbers, and it's the same with retiring shirt number with Hulk Aaron Millward. I think that's nonsense as well.
Yes.
Oh, no, it's not a big nonsense. I know we're Wigan.
That's for another show. There we go.
I know we're
Wigan. Just woke up.
But there's no bigger nonsense than Wigan having number 17, the Warriors fans or whatever.
Well,
that's the biggest nonsense.
One thing I would say as well about the 2025 World Cup is you'll probably see the first men's African team playing in that. We may even have a women's African team as well. That's going to add another layer onto it. Yeah. The Middle East Africa group is arguably the most exciting in terms of development. At the moment.
Possibly a Francophile one as well, which would,
Lebanon have normally claimed that place in recent World Cups, because they had to beat South Africa once, and South Africa play even rarely than the Australians do. But if we've actually got a group of African nations that start on a World Cup qualifying journey, and one of them alongside Lebanon is going to be there in the next tournament, we're talking about a whole different demographic.
Imagine Cameroon there. I've got my Nigeria shirt already, so I'm ready for that to qualify.
Nice.
I'm all right. I think the fact it's only 3 years away is a real benefit. You know, we had an 8-year gap, we had a 5-year gap,
then we
had a 4-year gap, but 3 years, like the countries haven't been in the camps and press conferences.
I'm googling little pastry shops in the south of France now. Exactly. I've decided where could I potentially go.
Literally planning a holiday and saying, but the teams are talking about it. You know, so talking to the Italians today, they're saying this is our team. The bulk of our team for 2025, because it's only 3 years away, and we know what we're doing next year, we know what we're doing the year after, and then we're there. We've never had that before.
Yeah.
That's real. It's luck, I know, but it's progress. You keep putting your hand. Are you going to ask a question? What's your question?
That's fine.
Does it matter? Do the girls and the boys play together?
They do indeed. Yeah, we don't have any specific teams for boys or girls. Everybody plays together.
You want to have a go? It's good.
Are there good? How many women, or are there going to be any women playing in the World Cup?
Watch Wales.
Yes.
Jodie Boyd Ward.
Yes.
She's fantastic.
Yeah. Jodie Boyd Ward, who plays at Leeds Rhinos, she will be playing. There's also for Wales, there's a young lady called Lucy Roberts, who will be playing as well. No relation, just in case.
spread across three nations.
Her middle name is always important. Yeah, so there's going to be two women playing for Wales in the World Cup, and I think I might not be 100% correct. I think USA might have a woman playing for the team as well.
Mm. So how old will you be in 2029? How many years is that? 7.
2029.
Maybe the World Cup after 2020.
16.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 16. How old do you have to be to play for England women? In the running game.
Well, it's 18.
All right, so the World Cup after that, you could play for England in the Women's World Cup and the Wheelchair World Cup. Make history. There you go, there's a target for you. What targets did I have when I was... How old are you?
Eight.
What targets did I have when I was eight? Watch more telly, probably. Eat more crisps.
Well, be a commentator. Well, there's nothing... Would you like to be a rugby league commentator? It's like, you might as well do it.
The rugby league
don't have to be very smart, put it that way. I'm proof.
Do you like pies?
Do you like pies? Pies? So pies.
There you go.
Now about Galloway's pies, can we just... I don't know whether we're getting towards the end of the podcast, but... Because we are in Wigan, have I hit the centre of the universe in terms of the pie? Could I just get from educated opinion that I have hit...
As a completely unbiased Wiganer, yes, you have.
Yeah, right.
But that's shadow of a doubt. If you just hang around for a few hours in the marketplace in Wigan, you'll be able to sample many delights.
But I swear I stood in the mall and was actually breathing in the pie fumes, and it was almost like a religious experience.
Do they have pie-flavoured vapes?
I'm thinking, I'll just give a plug. Another business I have on the side, my wife's business, is Mr. Voss Candles and Diffusers. We are in Australia and New Zealand. We have candles, diffusers, hand wash, body lotion. I'm thinking a pie-scented candle.
Brilliant.
Could do. I mean, barbecued onions would be one. Like, in Australia, people have barbecues. When you go outside, you say, someone's having a barbecue. It's always in the positive. That candle would be fantastic for someone who's not having the barbecue.
Imagine the smell and then finding out there isn't a pie to eat. That would be torture.
No, I've got to think that one through then, haven't I?
You could buy it for someone you don't like.
My wife's business is exactly the same as your wife's business, and it's based in Wigan. I think it's something she's considered, but probably not progressed.
Okay, all right. Well, anyway, just Mr. Voss, you can go on there, SimoneVossLuxury.com. You can see that. And I'm doing a little bit of wheeling and dealing while I'm in the UK, trying to get the Selfridges, Space NK, a few of these big stores. And you never know. I might be ex-rugby league commentator by the time. I'll wait till France, and then after France, I'll ex-rugby league commentator.
It's like having Steve Mascott here. But with candles rather than books.
Candles, yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised you're not here to launch his books. You must have already done it. Gavin, do you want to promote anything else, Andrew?
No.
Before I go down
the I've got two copies.
Do you have a thing, Gavin?
No helmets required. The only one's left. If you would like one, I'll sign it for you in exchange for some pie money.
Yeah, nice. No, and it's great too. I actually purchased a Greek jersey the other day. ChasingRoos.com is a great website, you know, really flying the flag for the game. And I think all the supporters stores, I hope that the World Cup merchandise stands don't mind if the clubs have their own little team shops open. I was really disappointed with some grounds and some weren't allowed. They said they weren't allowed to open. Come on. Yeah. We're all in the family here. It's not taking your business away. I've come from the other side of the world. I don't just want World Cup merchandise. I want to buy. And so the other day, into the Doncaster shop I went, bought a Doncaster jersey. Well, hey, everyone's a winner.
If Tottenham sold that short shirt they wore for their first game against PNG, a white shirt with a red V, and they're playing in St.
Helens. Deliberately, yes.
How many of those would they have sold outside the ground?
Yeah. Might have funded the Tongan Rugby League for the next 50 years.
They'd have sold out.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful shirt. I'm going to get whatever
if I can tonight.
Well, okay. That's great. How good is this?
Candles, books, just... The Daily Mirror in Lebanon.
Yes.
Have you got anything you want to promote? Use this opportunity for our thousand of listeners.
Well, in my day job, I work for the Mirror as the environment editor. So you could help us by buying some papers and keeping us in a job.
Yeah.
And then recycling the papers.
Yes, recycling, not burning them, I'll take it. You wouldn't burn them, would you? No. You wouldn't do them. Of course, yes, that's interesting. There you go.
Buy the Daily Mirror. Buy candles, buy books.
Dave Craven with the Mirror?
Sorry?
Dave Craven, excellent writer. Love Dave Craven. Good rugby league man and does a great job.
Phil, how do we promote the support Ireland and England for yourself?
Sorry?
Support England and Ireland in the World Cup for the family?
I'm pretty much supporting everybody, really, to be honest with you. I'm just an absolute rugby league nut. I'm gutted that Billy Boyle to be corrupt and haven't come over. That would have kind of been the icing on the cake for me. I just want to see more uncertainty, more upsets, more shocks.
Yes.
The game's not played in favour. I think there's a big shock to come at some point.
Yeah.
And we can see with the copper box, obviously, for all your group games, and then fingers crossed, you get through to Sheffield, because I'm not going to London. But Sheffield's where the semi-finals are. And then, obviously, Manchester for the final.
Yes, indeed. I'll be at all of those games regardless, either as a player or as a supporting parent, possibly. We need more people to see the game, because once somebody watches it once, they're just hooked.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was an England-Ireland final, what's the household loyalties going to be? Because, obviously,
I think there's going to be enough divided loyalties on the 9th of November. There was talk of a shirt for each nation being purchased, cut in half and sewn together to make two mixed shirts. I'm not sure quite how that would work. But yeah, it would be.
I think that's almost worse than choosing a side.
First time a half and half scarf would have worked.
Yeah.
Quite possibly.
Fill the magazines out. I've got to write my column, which I've not done yet.
Yeah. But don't forget to buy matchday programmes as well. I think they're really important.
Who's the editor of the Match Day programme?
I have no idea.
Well, I think it's pie time, folks. I think it's pie time.
Yeah. Team, thank you. I've forgotten all your names
now.
We've been here for 2 hours.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoy the rest of the World Cup. Andrew's sticking the two fingers up here. It's the good two fingers. If people listen on the podcast, it's the good two fingers, not the bad. Thanks to everyone who's made it here to Ashton in Makerfield, somewhere near Wigan. We're very pleased to have been here. We've not stopped recording yet, so I can't say you're better than the people in St Helens, but I'll do that in a second. Thanks for coming. Enjoy the rest of the World Cup. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay.
End stream. We're done.
There you go.